1. James released just enough bubbles to sink well below the surface of the glacial lake. He was counting seconds now with the accuracy of habit. Every morning during his school year back east, he swam half a mile at the pool, speed training. Each day at the end of his last lap, no matter what his time had been, he took his reward and, exhaling, let himself drop to the bottom. Such peace the way the noise stopped, the way gravity eased the weight off his body. It almost felt as if he could give up the tiresome compulsion of breathing. Maybe become aquatic. A bubble slipped from his lips and spiraled up. He continued to count, seconds into minutes into seconds. His heart rate slowed. How far could he push it? At Spirit Lake, James could endure submersion longer than in the crowded, chlorinated pool. Here, gray-green water sparkled as he touched the pumice bottom under the diving tower. He waved his arms in the transparent water, water clearer than air, letting himself lift and roll with the current. His Timex read 2 minutes and 55 seconds, and James's lungs ached to break the surface, but he hung on. After some time, he glanced at it again. 3 minutes, 5 seconds. Not enough. It hadn't been enough the last time. Was he man enough to qualify for the next Iceman competition in August? This year, it was in Alaska, and James was desperate to go to Anchorage. It was the very spot where, 10 years before, his mother took him from his father. Chances were good Dad was still in Anchorage. I'm in Washington now, James thought. So close. 4 minutes. Like a flash, his toes pushed off the bottom, and he shot to the surface. He sucked in air, breathing in his hard-earned ration of air, and, treading water, continued to breathe in shallow mouthfuls. He swam lazily to the diving tower, climbed the wooden ladder to the lower level, and grabbed his towel and glasses. He stood and replaced the thick horn rims when his eyes suddenly fixed south. During his swim, the fog had burned off around Mount St. Helens to reveal a classic golden triangle glistening in ice. Less than 2 miles away, James felt the volcano's gravitational pull as immediate and elemental, like leaning over the Empire State Building. He imagined the tallest pines seemed to lean into her. Then he heard his mother's voice. His heart jumped. Shit.
James? James! Here you are. I could have guessed. Have you even unpacked?
He glanced at her. He recognized that call anywhere, and from great distances. God, he wanted to dive back into the deep water. His gaze shifted from her to the sublime mountain, careful not to let his disappointment show. His mom had drawn on her eyebrows in high arches, giving her a surprised expression, even when she was bored.
Gloria baked blueberry muffins,
she said, her eyes still on him. Thanks. He pulled his towel tighter around his neck. I'll go inside and change. From the moment they parked their rattletrap Plymouth wagon at the landing, James felt haunted. White fog hung like a shroud over the eerie landscape. A pinkish smear on the eastern sky was the only indication that the sun had risen on Spirit Lake. They had driven across the continent to the end of the world as if the thin ribbon of Highway 504 stopped at the very edge. He unfolded himself from the shotgun seat and shook off sleep, but a dreaminess remained. Quiet lapping guided him down to the dock, where he took hold of a worn railing and breathed in deeply. Air fresh as rain. He had big plans for the lake. It was 2 miles across and back, perfect training for a long-distance swimmer. It would build his endurance, maybe make a competitor of him, and he would probably add it to the list of things he would talk about with his father when he met him. A wave rippled across the water, a trill of light on mottled gray. It reminded him of moonlight on a bald man's head. Why a wave? There were no boats, no wind, no reason for a wave, but there it was, like a ghost calling him in. His mom stepped to a post where she pulled a hand crank that carried a signal across the lake and buzzed in the kitchen of Harmony Falls Lodge to tell Aunt Marie to come and get them.
It'll be about 10 minutes,
she said, turning to James. Looking down, she smiled wearily.
Darn coffee to go. Spilled on my slacks.
June nearly fell out of the blanket-bunched back seat, brushing cheese puffs off her shorts. As she stood up, she widened her stance to release a wedgie. James rolled his eyes. What a goofball. She started in his direction. Shit, he wasn't ready for her chatter. After the 5-day haul, he was hoping to find some time alone. The sound of the drone of a motor nearly made him smile. He inwardly thanked the heavens that they were finally going to move. The old prow cruised through the mist as if floating on clouds. On board, James looped his thumbs tightly in his back jean pockets, shrugging his shoulders close as if that might keep the wet Pacific chill from leaching into his Yankee bones. Too much pit stop coffee had soured his mouth and made him grind his teeth. About 10 minutes across the lake, maybe halfway, the boat rocked. What the hell? James leaned over the rail, dampness settling on his forearms and eyeglasses like condensation on a windshield. An uncanny moan issued from the depths, like a vibration he felt more than heard. Did the others feel it too? Unlikely. His aunt gabbed and giggled with his mom, ignoring a battery of questions from June. Aunt Marie steered the old lifeboat around what looked to be a broken-off tree growing in the water. She glanced back at James.
Too bad you can't see St. Helens,
she shrugged.
Fog swallows it nearly every morning.
Laughing, she reached to squeeze his mom's hand. She air-kissed her back. Like jolly twins, those two. Suddenly, he shivered. Ahead of them, a makeshift raft slid hazily into view like an apparition. An old-timer in a bent western hat waved at them with a long, thin arm.
Wait,
he called, his voice raspy. But Aunt Marie didn't slow. Neither did she spare him a glance. Wait? What does he want? James turned to watch the guy's raft rock in their wake. Soon he faded back into the fog.
That's just Max,
his aunt muttered, frowning.
Old prospector, a recluse, been around forever.
Had anyone ever stopped for him? James felt a chill down his spine. What if he needed help? Gradually, the northern shore of Spirit Lake emerged in shades of gray. First an eerie tower, then some docks, and then, just like the picture postcard, an old lodge and 10 cedar-shake cabins snuggled into a vast forest near the shore. James stared at it, marveling at everything in front of him. Through the mist, James made out Uncle Hank standing tall and portly on the deck, his wide smile nearly overrun by a grizzled beard. To James's sleep-starved brain, he looked like Gandalf lording over a hobbit village. Harmony Falls roared behind the lodge. James tilted his head back to behold clouds of spray pillowing under a deep green canopy of cloud-tall firs. Aunt Marie eased the boat alongside the dock and then turned around to James and June. Her smile disappeared.
You kids pay attention. Round here we got bears. And all kinds of campers, too. It's a small lake, but it's public and it's popular.
Strands of her brown hair blew into her face as their wake rocked the lifeboat gently against the old wooden dock. Once his shoes touched the planks, his cousin Tess bounded down to the dock to relieve James of his duffel. Once he let go of the duffel, he flexed his arm and bent to carry the other heavy boxes up the cedar slab steps. Ahead of him, his mom carried only her purse and train case, with June close behind with her small suitcase.
Hey, this way.
Tess pointed inside Harmony Falls Lodge, showing her sweet, toothy smile. A good elder at 19, she took James in tow. He banged his way up a steep, narrow staircase to one of the 5 bedrooms. How dark the 1920s logger's lodge was. Even the ceiling beams seemed blackened. At his door, he whispered thanks to Tess, thrilled to get a room of his own. They hugged and laughed. It was the size of his bathroom back east, but he surely didn't mind. When she turned to help the others downstairs, James eased the door shut and put his overstuffed duffel on the lower bunk of a metal bed. He turned to a yellowed mirror hanging from a nail above a small table holding an enameled wash basin and pitcher. Stooping, he gazed at a cracked version of himself with a few days' stubble and eyes that looked like they'd been to war and back. People often told him he looked either tired or depressed. He was tired now, but always chalked it up to a high IQ. Not that he ever said that, though it was true. He was different, set apart at the very least by his preference for solitude. He set down his glasses and dipped his hands into the poured icy water to scrub off the trip grime. He splashed the water on his forehead and cheeks, toweled off, and replaced his heavy glasses. Ah, he could see again. He dug out his trunks. Time for submersion. Aunt Marie and Uncle Hank managed Harmony Falls Lodge and, finding themselves shorthanded that summer, had called James's mom.
"Great idea,"
Kay said. James heard her. Long-distance calls were a big deal in his house.
"It will be grand for the kids to experience nature."
So, without consulting him or his sister, she left her husband Dan in Boston, packed up the Plymouth, and pointed west. Now in dry clothes, James dug into his duffel to haul out his classic comics, Mads, and his required summer reading. He lined them up on the bunk. Look Homeward Angel, Poe's collected short stories, and his dog-eared copy of Catcher in the Rye. Lately, he'd been on a tear with Jack London. No contest, though. To build a fire was best. Depressing as hell, but excellent research for his covert plan. He had told no one. He was still forming the plan, but he had the money, hoarded from mowing lawns, and he was ready. That summer was a perfect time. It would be their time, father and son. He had enough money to buy them both a ticket to the competition. His dad would see for himself what James could do. They'd head to the mountains to camp, and Dad would tell stories at a lazy campfire. Would James recognize him from the picture he swiped from his mom? James credited his father for what little he knew of the wilderness. He had taught James his ABCs with picture books borrowed from the local library. James learned to name lakes and streams and trees and wild animals, too. In time, he taught him how to write all the names until his mother took James to New York City. Just like that. The car was packed when she pulled him out of nursery school and never went home again. The thought of his dad returning from work that day to an empty house, his boy gone, always choked James up. He had learned to swallow it, but still had no word for how it felt. He hadn't gotten to say goodbye. Can a 5-year-old even remember such things? Since then, James had learned to spell the Lithuanian words for little son, Mazai Sunus. It was such a private phrase that when he said it aloud, he could hear his father's voice precisely. James never quit reading and tore through novels in days. But that was a habit, his mother often reminded him, that kept him from teenage pastimes, such as dating.
"Get your head out of that book and go to a show or something,"
she'd say, which irked him. He was beginning his junior year with maybe 2 friends and no steady girl. Okay, no girl at all, which only seemed to confirm that he was not well-rounded. Worse than that, he was bored. So when he was offered a free Western vacation, he jumped at the chance to get his hands dirty and climb the volcano, maybe meet a girl, and escape his tedious stepfather, who was more interested in golf and litigation than his stepson's swim meets. "It's not even a team sport," Dan liked to say. Here was surely the place to train for the Iceman meet. From Harmony Falls across the lake to the Boy Scout camp was a mile. Or he could swim to Duck Bay for a 2-mile drill one way. No roads ran around Spirit Lake. Good, James thought. It would keep him focused. He would swim daily, do chores, read, and chop wood. He was cut off from the civilized world, from toilets and running water, from television and telephones, from all transportation except boats. Spirit Lake was so remote that the dining table's placemats claimed Harmony Falls was the most secluded spot in the Pacific Northwest. "So here I am," James thought, "swimming at the end of the world." His stomach growled. The aroma of hot berry muffins wafted up like an invitation. As James headed down, his every step caused the old lodge to elicit a creak, a shriek, or a sigh. He came into a bright, busy, incised kitchen with linoleum countertops, white cabinets, and an industrial-sized, blue-enameled cast-iron cookstove. As he walked in, everyone was talking at once, but the loudest voice belonged to the cook, who stirred a cauldron of bubbling blueberries.
"Tess, bring me that quart of maple syrup."
In her long, colorful skirt and oversized sweater, Gloria seemed bohemian to James. Easily as tall as him, but a good bit rounder, she wore bright orange wrist bangles that clacked as she stirred. His cousin suddenly stepped between them.
"James, get over here."
Tess dropped her knife, wiped her hands on her apron, and pulled him into a hug. She reached for the cook.
Gloria, this is Aunt Kay's son, James.
Tess winked at him.
See? I told you he was cute.
James reddened and stared at the uneven wood floor, any place but at the two females. Gloria turned to him. Her pale blonde hair peeked out of a headscarf and formed a fuzzy halo around her face.
Nice to meet you, but if you don't mind, please open those cans of tuna.
She pointed to the table.
And drain them before emptying them into that metal bowl.
James looked over at where she had pointed. There stood two cases of chum tuna, 10 cans a case.
Then when you're done, I've got 5 more things for you to do, including adding in the mayo and relish.
She smiled quickly.
We're officially open the day after tomorrow. 10 overfilled cabins.
She paused as if remembering something.
Hope you like to work hard, Mr. James.
It's James. But she was already halfway into the dining hall. He emptied 6 cans in 2 minutes into the huge bowl. 14 to go. His thumb and index finger would be blistered, but he played tough watching Tess cheerfully chop carrots, even with the 20-pound bag of potatoes waiting to be cubed. James spun towards the door when he heard a voice as deep as Perry Mason's.
What do you mean, reopen, sweet and mine? That place never got more than scrap copper.
A bear of a man nearly shouted at Uncle Hank as they approached the back kitchen door.
It'll poison the lake.
The man looked up and stepped aside when he saw people gathered there. He let Hank walk in first. His uncle grabbed James in a hug and announced,
Welcome to the new world!
When he laughed, his voice sounded gruff and soft, like timber falling on thick moss. James returned Hank's embrace, but in an instant his uncle pulled away to pat his friend's shoulder.
Here's my right-hand man, Ben Stwire.
A rough-hewn outdoorsman towered before James. His face was mapped with deep grooves and a scar that ran the length of his left cheek. James examined the scar, the skin, the black eyes. This guy was the real thing, a true man of the wilderness, someone like Davy Crockett or Kit Carson, who, left to his own devices, would survive anything. The man nodded at James without expression and shifted from one foot to the other. James couldn't help but stare. A leather-sheathed bowie hung from his belt, the blade of which had to be a foot long. James was fascinated.
Nice to meet you, sir.
James winced from the pressure of his grip. Ben nodded. James tried to smile.
You'll be seeing Ben around plenty.
Hank lightly punched Ben's arm and smiled.
Practically runs the place.
His uncle poured them both mugs of steaming black coffee.
Hank? Hank, come help, please.
Aunt Marie hollered from the dining room. Hank grinned and said as he left,
And your aunt's the one who runs us.
See you, kid.
Ben turned to leave and stepped out the back door, carefully balancing his scalding coffee. Cheery when they'd arrived that morning, the lodge turned bleak in the late afternoon rain as if the sodden woods had swelled and tightened around them. After dinner, James dried dishes. He didn't mind. Then he joined the crew at the huge Riverstone fireplace for hot cocoa. James's mother looked on blankly from an overstuffed chair, sipping chocolate, intermittently reading Frost. But she was miles away. Come on, James thought. How much Robert Frost could a person take? When June plopped down in her lap, his mother gently pushed her off.
You're too big for that, Junie.
She brushed invisible lint from her clean navy slacks and continued reading Frost. June rolled her eyes before she took a spot on the sofa. From his position, James could see the pout on her lips. James slightly shook his head. No question about it. His mother was remote. It seemed like she was drifting farther from his sister and him. Later, on his way up to bed, dog-tired, James registered dully that the waterfall power generator must have stopped. The old lodge's lamps glowed amber with the dirty burn of kerosene.